session number 11582, you're a 2.
Mr. Albert Hurst, Real 2. We were talking about your work at the National, the engine company.
Yes.
After the war had started, was there any shortage, you know, with the territorials leaving, were you short of engineers in the works?
As far as I remember, no. There seemed to be adequate staff.
So they didn't bring any women in?
Not till much later.
So everything was all right at
the
time?
They were mostly employed on machine work, on elementary machining.
But they hadn't come in then?
No.
So it was an all-male workforce in
1914?
So, yes. Were you in a trade union at all at work?
Yes.
Which trade union was it?
Boilermakers, entered a Boilermakers Union.
And how was it? Did most people belong to it?
Oh, yes, it was more or less compulsory.
Closed shop?
Yes.
And what did the union do for you? Can you just explain, you know, how it worked at the time?
Well, I never sort of had an application for them to fulfil any kind of practice.
So you were just an ordinary member?
And yes, that's all.
You weren't an activist in it?
No.
Now, you'd wanted to join up when the war started, and your father persuaded you.
Yeah.
Now, how did you actually come to join up? Because you joined up on Shrove Tuesday, 1915.
Mm. Well,
I'm not quite sure of the date. But
like I was saying, ran away from apprentices at 11 o'clock, ran away.
But could you just explain for the tape, because that wasn't recorded, that bit. Why exactly did you run away? Could you just say
the practice in engineering works was for the apprentices to run away at 11 o'clock on Shrove Tuesday. Before running away, the senior members of the employment used to blacklead the faces of the apprentices before they ran away. And I was subject to having experienced this.
What was it like?
It wasn't nice at all, because trying to wash it off irritated the skin ever so.
Oh, was that all they did, just blacklead your face?
Well, it went a bit further than that sometimes.
So it wasn't a very nice experience?
No, indeed.
So it was a bit like bullying you'd had at public school?
Yes, that's what it was. Like two or three chaps held you down, you know.
So they did that. And then the tradition was for you to run away at 11?
Yes, at 11.
And what were you supposed to run away to? I mean, were you just supposed to go out of the factory for the rest of the day, or what?
Yes, they'd come back till the following day.
So you get half the day off, basically?
Yes, in a way we did.
And what did you decide to do, and why?
Well, I was just hankering about joining the army. And I'd heard about the POWs, although I didn't know anybody at the time that was a member of the POWs. But I thought they were sort of classier battalions than the local battalion was being.
Now, why did you so much want to join the army? I mean, what made you want to join it? Can you remember now?
Well, I felt that it was the right thing to do in regard to suppression of Germany, which I felt was exceeding the normal requirements of living.
So you felt that Britain's cause was just, and it was your duty to go and join in.
Very much so.
Were you very patriotic?
Well, I didn't think so at the time, but possibly looking back, I might have been regarded as such.
So what happened? You left the works with your face
all black leaded.
Went home and got cleaned up. Got the tram to Manchester. And joined a Heaton Park battalion.
You went to Heaton Park?
I went to a Heaton Park.
And what was this, what was happening there? That was the where all the...
Well, there were four battalions in Heaton Park, and I went to the St. Margaret's entrance. The chap on the tram told me to get off there and where to go. Well, I didn't know what I was joining. I thought I was joining the 1st Battalion. But where I went, I joined the 2nd Battalion.
So that's the, you wanted to join the 1st Battalion of the 1st City Pals. That's the 16th Battalion, the Manchester Regiment. But you actually joined the 17th Battalion.
Actually joined the 17th, yes.
But you had no idea about that. You didn't.
No.
Where did you go to join? You went through the St. Margaret's entrance, and then what happened when you got inside the park?
Well, I inquired whether where I ought to go to sign on. And I was introduced to the recruiting department.
And were they in a building or was it a tent?
No, they were wooden huts.
What happened?
I was taken for a medical. The officer said... to examine me, the medical doctor said I had the biggest chest expansion he'd ever seen. He thought it remarkable, chest expansion. I always thought I was more or less normal to them.
Was it a thorough medical, a proper medical?
Oh, yes. You give what I thought a pretty thorough medical.
So you wouldn't have got
I wouldn't say it was a thorough, I was going in a hospital. No.
Do you think you'd have got in if you weren't fit? That's what I mean.
Well, judging by some of the chaps that I saw, I don't know how they got in.
So although it was thorough, you're a bit dubious as to what, you know, as to what they did when they found someone not quite right. They'd still take them in.
Well, at that time I wasn't aware of the differences.
What else happened? You had a medical. Did they ask you any questions?
Well, the normal kind of... and all kind of questions which you could seemed applicable.
And what happened then? And you'd had your medical.
Well, they sent me home then for I think about a couple of days.
Now, what happened when you got home? Because your father had told you not to join, and you had. How did they react, your family and your brothers and sisters?
Well, they didn't like it. Brothers and sisters didn't regard much about it, but the father, especially mother, didn't like it, you know.
What did they say or do? I mean,
I can't remember.
Were they upset or annoyed?
They were more annoyed than upset, as far as I remember.
So about a couple of days later, what happened then?
Then I went to join the army proper.
So you went back to Heaton Park?
Heaton Park.
What did you take with you? I mean, civilian things when you went into the army?
Only about a toothbrush and so.
What clothes did you take?
Oh, just what I stood up in.
Was that your work clothes or a suit?
Well, sort of just a suit, a rough suit kind of thing.
Not your best suit, then?
Not my best suit. Not my Sunday suit.
And what happened when you got there?
Well, I was allotted a hut. I can show you the picture of the hut I was in.
And you now knew you were in the 2nd Pals?
Yes.
And were you given a company at that time?
Yes, E Company. You see, there's... I joined the reserve company, E Company.
How long was it before you were kitted out with all your gear, you know?
Oh, quite a while. All we got, the first things we got was a Glengarry hat and overcoat. Those were the first things we got. Then we got puttees.
So you were just in your...
All this was funded by the Manchester Corporation.
So you were in your civilian clothes at the start?
Yes.
And were the rest of the men in of E Company in civilians?
clothes.
Yes.
What about the what about the other companies?
It was sort of progressive in regard to getting equipped clothing.
What about the ABC and the, you know, the main companies of the battalion that were there? Were they in full uniform?
Well, more or less the first come, first serve kind of thing.
So the E Company was lagging behind because it was the reserve?
That's all, yes. Hmm.
So what was your... you were put in a hut. What was the hut like that you were... That was where you were living, was it?
Yes.
For the first bit.
Well, a stove was in the centre and tables for dining on. We did our dining in these huts and heated by the central stove.
And how many men would there be in the hut?
50.
So they're quite a large hut.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And what were your beds like?
There were three planks laid on little trestles about 6 inches high, and three planks laid across them, full length, you see. And then we had two or three army blankets, I can't just remember. And pillows were, they gave us a pillow bag and a pile of straw, and you had to make your own pillows out of the straw, you see.
Was the bed comfortable to sleep in?
Well, more or less acceptable.
So you got, it was all right?
Yes.
And where did you put your belongings? I mean, you had your bed. What else did you have in the room for you? Did you have any cupboards or space?
Oh, no, nothing like that.
So where did you put what stuff you had?
Well, they had to more or less hide it among your blankets, which was surplus. There wasn't much surplus at that time.
Now, would there be a corporal in the or an...
Yes, a sergeant had a separate enclosed bunk.
At the end?
A little area at the end of the hut.
And that was...
It was enclosed for the sergeant.
And the rest of you were all new or newish recruits?
Yes.
What type of men were they? I mean, were they the same as yourself, or... What did you think of the men?
Oh, very much of a mixed bunch from all kind of occupations and endeavours. There were three miners who I was particularly associated with. They were near me, from Tilsley.
What were their names, do you remember?
Farmer, Owen, and Cook. Farmer.
You got on with them particularly well?
Yes, not at all bad.
Now, you didn't have much in common from your background with them. I mean, your dad was a solicitor,
yeah,
and you were an engineer, and they were miners, weren't they? I mean,
yeah.
Why do you think you got on so well with them?
I don't know. Joe Farmer particularly, I got on well with him. He got the DCM, is he?
And it was just you were just friendly with them?
Yes. Hmm.
Were there many from the same sort of background as yourself, you know, that had had a...
No. None that I can remember. They came from grocers and outfitters and cotton mills.
So you were... They'd be sort of prosperous working class or working class, and you were sort of lower middle class. Were you aware of that, you know, that you were from a bit better background than them?
In some instances, yes, it became apparent. I remember once in France, one of my friends, Johnson, he was a very rough spoken chap. He said, "What does they when they want some eggs?" I said, "Have you got it off?" I said, "Have you got that?" He had to go quite a way to the doctor's wife to ask for eggs, you see. Well, like I say, a very rough spoken chap, and when he got there, what he said to the doctor's wife was nothing like it what I'd said. She said to him, D. Albert, tell Albert. So he came to me, he said, "Who doesn't know our own bloody language?"
Did you, you know, with there being a mixture of men and some, you know, were there any people who were quite rough there that that were noisy and rough as far as...
Oh, yes. Every Friday night, the regular drinking was the only teetotaler about all this lot. Not.
You were the only teetotaler?
Yeah. And they used to go and get drunk every Friday night. Particularly these minor chaps.
Your friends?
They're drunk, more drunk than the others.
It didn't bother you, though?
No. They kidded me no end, you know. I came in for any amount of kidding.
That's it. You said kidding, but not bullying.
No, not bullying.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
You'd had bullying at your public school. You'd had initiation ceremonies,
yes,
which are really just bullying as an apprentice. Now, you don't seem to... Was the army different as far as you were concerned? Did you not get bullying in the army?
No, not comparative.
So it was just... joking and...
Yes.
So you weren't upset by people
in
the army?
No, no.
Right. What was your training like? I mean, can we go through the training? What did you start with, if you see what I mean? What was the first thing they tried to teach you in the army?
Well, the first thing was to put your putties on right, to dress correctly. You land us up in a row. And how to fasten your boot laces, that was the instance. He said, stand out, you. He said, they call themselves soldiers. I said, yes, sir. He said, you don't know how to fasten your boot laces. But we got them cross, you know, in that manner. So he made them all parallel with each other.
So between the eyes had to be parallel?
Yes.
Rather than across?
Yes.
Diagonally from up one to the
next?
Yes,
that's all.
And that was a rule, was it?
Oh, rather. The various folding your puttees. I just forget what. Possibly 8 folds. I'm not very sure of this now. But they had to be correctly spaced.
On your lower leg?
Yes.
Did you find that difficult? Because puttees are they're not as easy as when you're new to them.
Well, it's only sure there, but you can... It's only sure here. That's me on the fourth there. I'm fourth there.
That's
E Company.
That's Heaton Park, is
Eaton
it?
Heaton Park.
And the putties look all right there.
Yes.
Had you got the hang of it by then?
Yes.
Did it take long?
Oh, no. It just fell into it, you know, by watching others and being told a time or two.
Did the sergeant help you? I mean, or did you shout?
Well, he was more helpful than shouting. But I accept the normal manner of shouting in the army as being contributory.
So you learnt to sort of tie your shoes in the way they wanted, or
yes,
lace your boots, rather.
Yes.
And you got the putties. What else were they teaching you
wearing
in the early days?
Wearing your hats and getting your hair cut and taking the shame.
How did you have to get your hair cut? I mean...
Well,
was there a special army cut?
Yes.
What was it like?
Well, they took most of it off, you know.
Now, did you wear your hair short anyway before you went in?
No, just a normal... manner of usage.
Short back and side, sort of.
Yes.
But the army cut, what was that like? How short was it?
Oh, a bit more than normal. A bit more off than normal.
Did he mind?
No, no. I felt cleaner and fresher and so on.
What was it about? What about the shaving part? That wouldn't bother
me. Well, it didn't bother me at that stage because I wanted shaving. Being so young.
Would they have kit inspections in these early days, or would that come later?
Well, that came later as the kit arrived.
We'll come back to that then. What was your other training? Did they do PT or?
Oh yes, mounted PT.
Did they do that right from the start?
Yes.
What sort of PT did they do? How would they organise that?
Oh, all this kind of.
Is it just armed movements?
And running, and jumping, and so on.
Did it do you good?
It must have done, yes. For general health.
What about basic drill? Normal drill? Did you do?
you know, army drill, basic foot drill. Did they do that at Heaton?
Oh yes, we did a lot of that.
Now you'd like drilling the Boy Scouts, the bits you'd done.
Yes, I got the elements of the procedure.
Did you like it in the army?
Oh yes, I entered into it. It's all contributed to the general well-being.
What did you like about it so much? I mean, some people don't like drill.
The regimentation and the discipline appealed to me. To be associated and accepted by men.
And so you did quite a lot of drill?
Yes.
What about route marches? Did you go on there?
Yes, we did a lot of route marching.
What would a typical route march be like? Where would you go from Heaton Park?
Well, we went Whitefield way, on towards Bolton. No direction is that way.
About how far would you walk in one go?
About 10 miles, possibly.
And would you have a band with you?
Oh, yes, we had a very good band. Now, St Martin's Camp was at the end where Bessers of the Barnes, you've heard of the band, and it was a real good band then, and the bulk of the Bessers of the Barnes players joined our battalion.
So
the best band in the division.
So you had this band with you, and what sort of stuff would they play when you were on a route march?
Marches, of course. I can't remember the title of them. But,
did it help you when you were feeling tired?
Oh, ever so much. Yes, inspiring. Well, the conclusion of every march before we did his best, the band played a Manchester march past. That was a practice. Every time when the battalion were being disbanded. Dismissed.
After a march?
Yes.
And the military music did have a stirring effect on you?
Very much so, with me.
Did they play any of the popular songs while you were marching, or was it just marches?
No, no popular songs.
Would you be allowed to sing while you were marching? This is when you were going from Heaton Park, not
yes,
in France.
Yes. Yes, you're sort of. When you got marching, it was march at ease. And marching at ease, and the manner of carrying your rifle, in the manner which we found most acceptable in practice, and that kind of thing. And playing mouth organs or singing, which is customary.
And what sort of thing? So the band wouldn't be playing during that?
Well, when the band wasn't playing.
And what sort of songs were popular then in 1915? Do you remember?
No.
Would they have? I mean, there were songs like Tipperary that people have perhaps heard of.
Yeah.
But would they make up their own words? Sometimes a bit rude.
That, as it so, yes.
And they'd sing them in England, would they? Or was that more something that happened in France?
In France.
So in England, they'd just sing ordinary songs.
Yes.
Not with the rude words.
No.
Such. Now, when you went through a village or somewhere, or you know, through the streets. Mm. Would the civilians turn out to have a look, or, I mean, would anyone take any notice of you?
Not much, no. Just regarded as being a bit of traffic kind of thing.
So even with the band playing, people didn't take a lot of notice?
Well, they might. Children especially seem to be interested in that kind of thing.
What would they do? Would they follow you? Or?
Well, they'd cheer or shout or something like that.
But the grown-ups pretty well
accepted as being part of the show.
Would you ever rest? I mean, 10 miles a fair while.
Oh, yes.
Did you do the rest system?
Yeah, 10 minutes halt per hour. And the rate of marching was about 3 miles an hour.
So you had a rest every hour for 10
yes.
minutes. And what would you do during the 10 minutes? What would
try and recover from the march.
You were allowed to fall out then?
Yes.
Would you stack your rifles in England or not bother?
No, the practice of stacking rifles wasn't carried out much except on one occasion in France, I remember it.
But in England, you just
piled arms.
In England, you just kept your rifle with you.
Yes.
Your belt. So that's route marches. What about? Did you do any training in rifle?
Oh yeah, musketry.
Did you do it at Heaton Park?
Yes, I did.
And how did this start? I mean, teaching you to shoot a rifle. How did this start? And you know, to take you through it.
Well, the tripod with a sandbag on it, and on the sandbag was a rifle, and you had to sight this rifle on various features which are recognisable, you see, and then in your turn you came and set this rifle on a known target, and the musketry officer then check your sighting.
And what was the secret of sighting? I mean, what did they tell you to do to make it spot on? Or was it just a matter of common sense?
As far as I remember, it was common sense.
And were you all right at it? Was your eyesight...
Oh, yes. I was the 8th best shot in the battalion, it turned out.
So that was the first stage, sighting it, using the tripod. Yeah. What was the next thing they took you on to?
Loading and unloading.
Not firing, though? Just
no, not firing.
Loading and unloading.
Now, with only a few rifles to do this with, you know.
Were they the SMLE, or were they the longer ones, or were they Ross?
The long magazine.
And you practiced loading the clip. Was it the clip?
Yes.
And why were you doing that?
The practice of putting dummy cartridges into the magazine. We had wooden rifles, you know. Was there only one or two real rifles to operate on at all.
So you took it in turns to practice that?
So, yes.
And that was to get you quick at loading, was it? Or just competent at
loading?
Yes,
a sort of competence.
And what was the next stage on learning to shoot?
Well, we didn't actually shoot till Ron Solver was playing one, we got the short lee.
So at Heaton Park, you never went further than the sighting?
No,
and the thing.
No.
Did they teach you there how to maintain a rifle?
Oh, yes.
And what were the things they expected you to do to keep your rifle in working order?
Especially to employ the pull-through in a continued manner, and not to pull. You see, that was the end of the rifle. You hadn't to get your string there, you got to pull in the line of the barrel.
Pull straight out and not
yes,
at an angle
not
over
an
the,
angle.
Over the,
so
the
you
end
wouldn't
of the
wear the exit part of the rifle.
To avoid damaging it?
Yes. And made special interest in regard to the full amount of cleanliness and...
How did they check it was clean?
The officer, you see, you put your thumb in the aperture above the magazine, and the officer looked down and see the reflection of the thumb to make sure the barrel was clean.
So that, but you'd only get the occasional go on a gun to practice that at Heaton Park. But you were learning all that stuff.
Yes, yeah.
Now, what were the wooden rifles like you had? That was for your drill, was it, and for your route marches?
Well, the barrel was made of iron, solid iron, and the rest of it was took the form of a rifle in wood. But when you tried to put them down, they sheared, the wooden part sheared off. So there were only two or three of these dummy rifles, actually. And you survived this practice of carrying and...
So the dummy rifles fell apart.
Yeah.
Would you carry them with you on the route marches?
Oh, yes. They were...
The ones that weren't broken?
The ones that were broken.
And you'd use them for the drill practices?
Yes. But like I say, they were so limited that...
What would you do if you didn't have a real rifle and you didn't have a wooden rifle?
You just had
to pretend.
You didn't do any.
No.
You had nothing.